Oh, it's one of those races closely watched across the country, here in Montana as well. Montana has a newly formed House District, House District 1. It's the Western District. Sure, talked a lot about it. The Democratic nominee for that seat is Monica Trinnell. And she's a former Olympic rower, and she joins us today. And look, there's no shortage of issues here, right? We talk about inflation at all-time highs or near that. We do have a drug crisis we've talked about. Many believe that's driven by the unsecured southern border, a national debt that really has grown like 35% in the past 3 years, and international conflict that could threaten to pull the United States in a nuclear war. Man, talk about some issues. Join us today as we talk about those issues that we face in Montana and America today with Democratic congressional candidate Monica Trinnell.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today, 866-627-5483, or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, here's your host, Tom Schultz.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. We're at midweek, right? I don't know if I believe in hump days because, like I say, on Fridays, we, you know, great, and only two more working days this week. I think we pour in a lot of hours, and I hope they're enjoyable hours for you. I know that you spend that 1 hour here, and it we try to honor that. Thank you so much. We're two decades strong and working on three. From Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside Monica Trinnell is with us today. And I know election just a little ways around the corner. And I know that she has been beating the street, so to speak, and getting out. And Monica joins us now. Born in Bighorn, Wyoming, but grew up in Montana. Miles City, Ashland, and Billings, she calls home. Now it's Missoula. Good morning, Monica. How are you?
Good morning, Tom. I'm doing awesome. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I appreciate you being here, too. And you know, there are some tough issues to talk about. And I appreciate, as we just chatted, that we'll kind of take those head on. But first, you know, tell us who Monica Trinnell is. I know you come from a big family. That's pretty cool. I followed your rowing career as well over the years, 96, I think, and then maybe it was 2000 Olympics, repping Montana in that regard. Are you? Who the heck are you?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a mom. That's my most important job. And up last night in the middle of the night with an earache, as, you know, all parents have faced that challenge. So that's the biggest part of my life and the most important role that I have today. So it's funny hearing you talk about my childhood. I say Powder River, let her buck. So if anybody knows Powder River country, that's where I had my formative childhood years, kindergarten in Mouse City, elementary school in Ashland at St. LeBre. Then we moved to Golden Valley County and went to Broadview, played Class C basketball, and then high school at Billings Central because we had to go to the Catholic school, you know?
Yeah, so. Yeah. No, we know. You must be a fan of Joe Glenn then, right? Joe, former University of Montana football coach, and was always Powder River letter buck. It was one of his his famous sayings. So talk more about your childhood, and then how you got into rowing, because you know, if you're paddling in Montana, it's usually down a river somewhere.
So, Tom, first and foremost, never, never call it paddling. We call it rowing. it's actually kind of a funny question. And one that I didn't, you know, I've gotten it a lot on this campaign. And honestly, one of the things that I've come to see is that growing up in Eastern Montana, I was really rooted in the outdoors. I mean, we were always outside. The worst insult that we could fling at each other, my nine siblings and I, when we were, you know, playing or, you know, trying to insult each other, was, you don't want to be an indoor kid, or you're just an inside kid, you know. So it was always go outside and play. You know, we had chores to do, and we were outside all the time. I mean, I remember sledding under the Northern Lights, and it was just it's deeply formed who I am. And so I went to Gonzaga to college, walking across the quad, and there was this boat out there, and somebody said, oh, you're tall, do you want to try this sport? And I fell in love, mostly because I think it was an outdoor sport, and it's right at water level, and it's, you know, it's really magical. You have this really incredible outdoor feeling when you're doing it. So It was love from the first stroke.
What is international competition like? I'm curious about this. Because when you're competing at the Olympics, that is elite level. And the competition is I know, just tremendous. What was that like then growing up in Montana, getting that experience, of course, going to Gonzaga, but then getting out there on that international scene? What did you learn from that?
I always tell people that I got my Olympic training. I got an early start with training, moving hay bales, all summer, long summer days. Because they were they weighed about as much as I did, and that's what we spent our days doing. So, but it was really an incredible experience. I mean, the Olympic Village was amazing. You see people, athletes' bodies that, you could tell the difference between a high jumper and a volleyball player, and, just the experience of being in that setting and those 2 weeks. I remember, so rowing is always the first week of the 2 week Olympic Games. And so in the second week, we get to go watch whatever sports we want. And I actually kind of got into watching boxing and wrestling, which are sports that I'd never seen live. And then watching them, I was just so impressed with the athleticism of those, the people who were doing those sports. It's amazing. It was, and I got to talk to them and say, what's your training look like? So just, connecting me across countries, across sports, competing in Atlanta and then Australia, it was really an incredible opportunity to meet people in a different way and, see the world through that vantage point. I feel incredibly fortunate to have had that experience and that background.
Yeah, bless indeed. That is unique for a lot of people, like I say. When you get to that elite athletic level, it puts yourself in a different category than the average scratch golfer, so to speak. Monica Trinnell with us, Democratic nominee for Montana's Western District, the U.S. House seat, running against Ryan Zinke. Let's get to some of these issues. I mean, I know that you're out there. Yeah. And I know people are talking about inflation. It's a multifaceted issue. I think a lot of indications are that our energy prices are causing a lot of the inflation, but there's a lot of things that play into this. How do we, and inflation, as I'm sure you're hearing, has a tremendous impact, especially on lower income earners, seniors, people on fixed budgets. In fact, I tout a statistic that came out in 2018 out of Congress that a 10% rise in energy costs puts almost another million people, 800,000, under the poverty line. It's very serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, for me, the way I come at it is 90% of a solution is a correct diagnosis. And so I think it is important to get our hands around what is driving, what are the real drivers of the increased prices. And so what we're seeing right now are corporate monopolies recording record prices. Shell came out with record prices, ConocoPhillips record profits, I'm sorry. We're seeing that these big giant corporations are keeping their prices high as, we're paying record prices, they're getting record profits. And so that is absolutely one of the drivers and one of the inputs that is, causing the pain is the consolidation of the markets. And we see that in the meatpacking plants. We've seen that with groceries. Right now Kroger's is trying to buy Albertsons, and it's just, on and on and on. So that's certainly one of the important drivers that we have to take a real look at. You didn't mention diesel prices, but that is one of the pain points for a lot of your listeners and a lot of people across Montana. So, and I think understanding what's behind the diesel prices is looking at the refineries, and a lot of them closed during the pandemic, have not reopened. Certainly that processing is still lower, and one of the inputs there is maintenance on the refinery. So the vulnerabilities that we have to the global market were created in 2015 when we opened our domestic energy production into the global market. That's something that Ryan Zinke voted for. So as we are facing higher prices because we're competing for our own commodities against a global market, that was a decision that was made by the party in 2015 with Ryan Zinke voting for that. So, you know, that's information you need to know as you assess where we are today. What else did you want to talk about on that?
Well, let's go down
several different rabbit holes. So.
Well, let's go into energy here for okay. a little bit. And I've been talking, and it seems to be playing out. You see that in Europe. I believe we're making an irrational rush to renewables. And there's been a lot of evidence that is pointing that out now, that we don't have the raw minerals. They won't be ready in time. And the common cliche is that we're tearing down the house we live in, and yet we have not built the new house we want to move into. When we look at energy policies, the Democratic Party is not been, well, it's perceived to not be overly friendly to today's fossil fuel industry. And it's more than just perceived. We've seen the leases, the cancellation of the Keystone XL pipeline. Talk about this energy transition. And then in context okay. of, do you see us in a climate emergency?
Yeah. So, and I appreciate the conversation because I think it's an important one to be having, and it's important to have it in an honest way. And so, some of the other inputs that you didn't mention are the severe drought that we're experiencing, the 3-year ongoing drought that's real, that's across Montana, but, you know, really focused in a lot of areas on the Highline, Northeast Montana. Late snows, flooding, fire season. So those are inputs that we need to be thinking about too. So where are we? What are we going to do? And how do we move forward? The way I talk about it is that the energy transition is underway. It's happening across the world, whether we like it or not. I mean, one example is when we, 200 years ago, goods were moved by barges on rivers. And we came up with a steam engine as a different way to move goods. And you know what the canal operators and owners did? They built more canals. That's what people do when they have their money invested in a certain kind of way of doing business. And so let's make sure that we're also following the money and know whose interests are served by outcome A compared to outcome B or outcome C, and make sure that we, the people who are actually going to be paying for these things and being affected by them, are doing the things that are in our best interest, not necessarily chasing money for corporate profits. So keeping that context in mind, the energy transition is happening across the world, and I want Montana to lead it. I think we have the ability to lead it, and I think it will benefit us. Here's a couple of reasons why I think that. Our wind in Montana is winter peaking, so we're positioned to sell our wind into the Northwest, or our transmission system is strong in Montana. And we know, for example, Colstrip has 4 units. Units 1 and 2 are closed. They've been closed for a couple of years. That generation is now entirely replaced by the wind project that is, it has a 90-mile generation tie line into the substation in Colstrip. The 5 counties that it runs across are going to benefit to the tune of about $217 million as a result of that wind being exported out of Montana. That's real money for rural counties that need that kind of investment. That will help fight against inflation. Other things that we have, there's a $1 billion hydrogen project that's being looked at in Butte, so at the intersection of I-15 and I-90. That's a potential investment there that is a good, reasonable energy resource that can replace some of the higher capacity resources like diesel and gasoline. So as we talk about the energy transition, for me, the question is, how can it serve Montana? How can we benefit from this? So when you turn your light on, do you really care what powers that, or do you want it to be reliable and cheap? that's what I want. I want to know what's going to go on, and I don't want to pay a crap ton of money for it.
Well, and I tell you what, I got to take a break, and there's more. I mean, we can certainly talk energy, and I know you know energy, so I appreciate that as well. But let's roll this bumper, and we'll take a break and come on back with more. And again, the phones are open. Monica says call us, 866-627-5483. You can text a message here, too, at 781-627-5483. Questions for the Democratic nominee for Montana's Western District U.S. House seat, 866-627-5483. We'll be back with more Voices in just a bit. General season is here, and in 2022, Montana FWP is continuing CWD, chronic wasting disease, surveillance across Montana. If you harvest a deer, elk, or moose in these surveillance areas, please stop at a CWD sampling station. And to find a sampling station, please visit the FWP website. For information about getting your animal tested for free by FWP, proper carcass disposal, and assistance with sampling your animal, visit fwp.mt.gov/CWD. Brian Bennett has headline news upcoming shortly. Tom Schultz alongside with Monica Trinnell, Democratic nominee for the U.S. House seat, Montana's newly formed Western District, and phones are open. Got a couple coming in, so be patient if the phone is busy, 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. Monica, again, thank you for being here. I appreciate that. I know it's a tough race. As we get some of these calls lined up, go ahead and do that, Cody. Let's talk more about energy, because do you think that we are in a climate emergency, you do?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. I was assenting to having the conversation.
The question,
sorry.
The conversation. Gotcha. All right.
Didn't mean to interrupt, Tom.
No. Do you think we're in a climate emergency? I mean, because... I have said and believe that we can transition reasonably, responsibly, if we do kind of think into this. But under the pretext of a climate emergency, there are these draconian measures, I think, that are and I think the public is being used here for a purpose that doesn't necessarily, in my opinion, is honest. I'd like an energy transition, but I don't think that we are in a climate emergency. I guess that's my opinion, but what's yours?
I think I would like to frame the discussion and the debate, because I think there's a lot that you and I do agree on here. I don't want the public to be used either, and I don't want there to be fears about things that we can't tackle or change or solve. So I don't like the, you know, crying, the sky is falling. For me, the way I come at it is, how do we solve a problem that we're facing? So we are facing a warming planet. That's real. And so how do we solve that problem? That's how I come at it. And I think that's the Montana practical mindset of solving real problems. So I agree. I think we need to have honest conversations and say, what are the solutions and how do we move forward together? And so I did want to come back because there were a couple of open things that I wanted to address in the energy conversation. Yeah. And so just quickly, I've represented Montana landowners, private property owners, who have decided that they want to use their property to have a wind turbine, for example. And I'm working right now on a solar battery hybrid project in Wheatland County. But landowners benefit from these, and they do so significantly, and sometimes it creates the cash flow needed to keep an egg producer operating. I mean, there's a fairly significant cash flow that's real. And so I've worked on these. I've written landowner contracts. I've worked on these projects from soup to nuts across Montana, and I know how they work. I know how they can benefit Montanans, and they have been very popular. You mentioned, I will say on that point that private property rights are really important to me, and I think it's important that people are able to use their property as they see fit. And that is litigation that I have been doing on behalf of Montana ranchers. And so the other thing that you mentioned were leases, and I think you sort of touched on the Democratic Party being anti-fossil fuel, which I think is maybe not necessarily fair. The Inflation Reduction Act, and you've seen Senator Tester and Senator Manchin talk about, you know, opportunities for gas moving forward that's in that Inflation Reduction Act. The reality, though, are there are tens of thousands of leases for oil and gas that are not being used today.
Yeah,
and so,
and that's a red herring, too, because those are tied up by regulations in a lot of ways.
I don't know that that's true. I'm going to push back against that a little bit because I think that there are opportunities there that producers are not pursuing, not because of regulations, but because the long-term investment, the costs are in the, you know, the foreseeable profits. I mean, these corporations are about making money for their shareholders. That's their business. And that's not a bad thing, right? That's their job. They're supposed to make money, and good for them. So what they're doing is looking at what is the future hold? Where are the resources going to be in the future? So for me, what's important is to have an honest conversation about where we're going, what the glide path looks like, how we transition to that in a way that benefits Montana. And like I said, I've been here, I've been on the ground. I know how these projects work, and I know how the money can benefit Montana, and that's what I want to do. I want to work for Montana, and I want to bring money to our home.
Would love to follow up on that, but I'm behind for a break, and then we've got Skip standby in Hamilton, Pat listening in Helena. We'll go to the phones with Monica Trinnell in just a bit, Democratic nominee for Montana's Western District U.S. House seat.
Prepare to be shocked. Our power bills are getting jacked up. We can thank special interest lobbyist and public service commissioner James Brown. Brown approved a $92 million increase in our utility bills in the middle of the worst inflation in decades. James Brown helps utilities boost their already huge profits. For Montana Supreme Court, thumbs down on lobbyist James Brown. But Justice Ingrid Gustafson is a much better choice. Gustafson is fair and impartial, a proven record of protecting our Montana constitutional rights, standing up for our public lands and streams. Gustafson, on our side, not the greedy corporate special interests. A justice, not a lobbyist. Justice Ingrid Gustafson for Supreme Court. Paid for by Montanans for Liberty and Justice, 32 South Ewing, number 304, Helena, Montana, 59601. Alan Smith, Treasurer.
Right back into this and right back to the phones with Monica Trinnell. She is the Democratic candidate for the U.S. House seat in Western District, newly formed. A lot of excitement about that. A lot of people watching that race as well against Republican Ryan Zinke. Monica, again, appreciate you being here and opening up the phones now. Skip listening. We're on now in Hamilton, KLYQ. Big shout out to all my friends. Lived in Missoula for a lot of years and got a lot of friends in the Bitterroot. Skip, good morning, man. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Good morning, sir. And Monica, I was talking to you yesterday. We got cut off on another program. And I hope you're having a safe trip across the state. I wanted to find out how you thought about, this is like education season, not just election season. In the state of Montana, we have reasonable term limits on our legislators. I'm wondering what you thought about term limits at the national level for our congressional people. And then I had a technical question, because I always thought about this. At the end of an election cycle, when you got money left in your coffers from a campaign, how is that money treated, either tax-wise can you save it up in a war chest, like for another race? Things like that. I just wanted to answer those two questions, and I hope you have a safe trip. I'll listen off the phone. Thank you.
Skip, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Skip. Thanks, Tom. So two parts to the question, term limits and campaign finance. So on term limits, and they're related, I think that there is a significant need for campaign finance reform. In 2011, the voters of Montana passed a ballot initiative that 75% of Montana voters voted in favor of the congressional delegation from Montana supporting a congressional or a constitutional amendment that would essentially reverse Citizens United and get the money out of politics, which I am all for after 18 months of campaigning, I can tell you I am all for that. And as far as campaign finance goes, I will say that of the money that I've raised for my campaign, 73% of it comes from you, comes from Montana. I'm really proud of that number. Thank you, Montana, for your support. And in contrast, Ryan Zinke's money, a single digit 8% comes from Montana. We will serve the interests of the people who send us there, and you can tell by the money that I will serve Montana.
What about term limits? Less than a minute here.
Yep. So on term limits, the concern that I have about term limits is that two parts to that. First of all, that's what elections are. We need to show up. We need to vote. We need to participate in our democracy and vote people out. If we don't like them, vote them out. But I do think the money part makes that hard. And so that's why we need campaign finance reform. With term limits, what we see is a shift to too much emphasis on lobbyists. So lobbyists have more power and more money and more say in how our government functions. And we've seen that in Montana. We've seen the disproportionate impact of lobbyists, and that is money. So if we want to get money out of politics, I don't think term limits is the way to go at it.
All right, stand by. We got more. Pat, stand by as well. Brad, we'll be back with more with Monica Trinnell here on Voices in just a bit.
We asked Montana farmer Walt Sales about the challenges of mental health in agriculture.
Another drought. There always is. There's always going to be another something. I grew up in a generation of you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. But it's become evident is what do you do if you can't even find those bootstraps? If you need to talk to somebody, go to beyondtheweather.com for free counseling for Montana ag producers.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
Sure appreciate you being here. We are two decades strong, working on three, trying to provide an objective perspective. And again, thank you so much. Stand by, Brad and Pat. We're going to get to you right now. Monica Trinnell is with us, Democratic nominee for Montana's Western District U.S. House seat. Powder River born, so to speak, in Bighorn, Wyoming, but grew up across Montana in Miles City. She mentioned Ashland and Billings, too. And then Bachelor's of Arts from Gonzaga, and then her Juris Doctorate from Rutgers University. Monica, again, appreciate you being here. Let's go right to the phones because I know we've got some calls coming in and we only have a couple of lines here. Pat's been standing by and Helena, Pat, you're so patient. I thank you so much. You're on with Monica now.
Well, I better be patient. And I don't mind. And I'm so glad that you brought Monica on. Okay, here's my thing. Different angle, maybe. Maybe you've covered this. I am a wildlife activist, and I contribute to wildlife. And what I am concerned about in the energy production area is these wind. What do I call them?
Birds. The turbines.
The turbines. I'm worried about the turbines because we're chopping
killing
up our golden eagles. And there's been reports in our newspaper about the decline of the new golden eagle population, and actually the wind power has been suggested as one of the causes. And what I'm wondering is, has any talk that you've heard been done concerning the re-engineering of the turbine towers with a basket over the blades so that the eagles are not going to be perching on the blades and all of a sudden they start up and we've got hamburger. I will get off the line and let you tell me. I'm going to contact Audubon about this and I'm going to say, what are they doing out there? Because we're losing our eagles. Okay, thank you.
No, thanks, Pat. Good question, and appreciate your engagement and your activism and your participation in democracy. Super important. In terms of the wind turbines, there is a lot of misinformation and data based on the early 90s, sort of the first generation of windmills and turbines that went up, which if you look at them, pictures, you can see they're shorter. They are, the blades of the turbines are straighter. That has shifted. And if you look at the turbines now, a couple of recent examples of newer projects, the Eastern Montana is one, but there's one north of Reed Point, about 9 miles north of Reed Point in Stillwater County. And then there's another one in Yellowstone County, right at Broadview, that you can see on that road over to Roundup from Broadview. So those are examples of the new turbines and new that are engineered to look like the fin, the dorsal fin of a whale. And so they are rotated and shifted slightly. There are fewer of them. And the way they operate the turbines now, the way they place them and they stagger them on the ground, and they actually can shut off the turbines and the rotation when the migration is happening. So that's data that everybody knows and that they have. So the way that they're looking at that now, these are math problems, they're engineering problems, and they're really tracking pretty well migration routes and able to adjust for the turbines spinning to accommodate those flight patterns. So those are things that are ongoing and happening. They're certainly not zero kill rate. That's not the case. But every time you put something up in the air, like a helicopter or a plane or anything like that, you put you put wildlife and birds at risk. And so it is now at a margin that is much, much different and much lower. So make sure you're looking at the sources you're reading. Make sure you're looking at data that's new and that's recent and that is tracks with the actual turbines that are getting built today.
Pat, thanks for your call. We'll go quickly to Brad listening in Laurel on the Mighty 790 KGHL. And good morning, Brad. You're on the air with Monica.
Yeah, good morning, Tom, Monica. So that your listeners know, Monica and I worked together for several years when she was an attorney for the PSC, and I was serving on the PSC, and I've always enjoyed talking to Monica.
Good morning, Monica, Commissioner, Senator.
Yeah, good morning. my question is, it's been predicted that there will be serious shortages of diesel across wide swaths of the nation beginning in about 3 weeks, which is the heating season. Do you think that those predictions are true? If they are, is there a proper response from the federal government? If so, what is that?
Thanks. Should I call you Senator, Commissioner, or just Brad? And thank you for the call. And
my friends call me Brad. You may call me Brad.
So the diesel shortage is a worldwide problem and is, like I said before, 90% of a good solution is a correct diagnosis. So what's happening across the world? When the pandemic happened, jet fuel, the demand for diesel, it stopped overnight. And you all remember that. You all remember what happened to the prices. So some companies closed around 1 million barrels a day of refining capacity during a pandemic just because of that. So that yo-yo or pancake effect is having the impact now that we're seeing. Some of those refineries didn't reopen. Some of them are closed right now for maintenance. So when the Russian invasion of Ukraine happened, that exacerbated something that was already in place. We had low supplies. How do we fix it? So that's really the question. How do we fix it? I think we need to look at what would it take to have heavy refinery maintenance, either accelerated or, make sure that's working so that we can have diesel fuel in place. But I think we need to step up refining as much as we can safely do in the immediate term. So that needs to happen today. It's not a lack of oil that we're having. It's really refining at this point. So to the extent that we can access and use refineries to address the immediate short term, and where there are options for the feds to step in and help with that process, then yes, that's what I think that it is happening based on the, you know, the reading and the information that I have.
Brad, follow up?
Yeah, I think everything you said is accurate. The one thing that's left out is that we are exporting precipitate, which includes diesel, at record amounts, particularly to Central America. So we have the heavy crude to make the diesel. We're refining it. We have the refining capacity. Refining capacity is at 97.5% along the coast and, you know, the Gulf Coast. And then we're exporting the diesel to other countries. And in order to have them shift that production to the United States, we have to match the world price. And that seems to be the problem.
Right.
Is that we're actually exporting what we make despite the shortages that it creates.
Right. And the reason that we're doing that, I don't know if you were on earlier, is because of the 2015 vote that Ryan Zinke took to make us do that. So that is about profit for oil corporations. So allowing them to sell into the global market increases their profits. Ryan Zinke supported that, and we're paying the impacts of that today. That's real. So the fact that we're competing for gas and oil for our own commodity with a global market is something that, you know, the party thought was a good idea in 2015, and Ryan Zinke voted for. So let's be honest about what the drivers are and why we're paying these high prices right now.
No, I don't think that's the full story behind that legislation, but I got to move on. Brad, thank you. Monica Chanel with us as well. And let me just, before I go to break, Martin, stand by, listening in Great Falls. This hour does go real fast. Do you think it's problematic, Monica, or, you know, do you agree when the president says we're going to put oil out of business? He said that in a couple of occasions. Previously, President Obama said the same thing. What kind of message does that send? You know, when you talk about investment, it's for me, it's not, again, as I said, the math just doesn't add up in that regard either.
I think one of the data points to look at that's important is that during the Trump administration, there were enormous subsidies for coal plants. They threw everything they could at keeping coal plants open. And even with those subsidies, more coal plants closed during that administration than had ever closed during any other period. And that's because that's not where the money is. I mean, these corporations are about making money. That's what they're supposed to do. That's capitalism. And it's good. I mean, you know, we want that, right? We that's what they're supposed to do. Good for them. You know, go for it. But the reality is that we need to really be looking at is why are these corporations shifting their investments? Why are they looking towards a different future of where they're going to be making their money? I mean, the hurricane in Florida and the outages there, those are real things. And so, you know, the future lies in different energy resources, and I think let's not run from that. Let's embrace it. Let's make it work for Montana.
All right, stand by. Again, Martin listening in Great Falls. I think we got another call coming in. We'll try to maybe do a little rocket round here and see if we can get those in. Monica Trinnell is with us. She's a Democratic candidate for the Western District House seat, and we're back with more. It's 866-627-5483, and then 781-627-5483 on the text message. It's Voices of Montana, and back with more in a bit.
Hi, Montana Supreme Court Justice Ingrid Gustafson. I've been a judge for 20 years, the last five on the Montana Supreme Court. I've spent my judicial career fighting to protect your constitutional rights. As we celebrate the anniversary of our Constitution, it disappoints me my opponent is working with people who want to get rid of it. Our Constitution commits to protecting, enhancing, and developing agriculture. We can't lose this way of life. Montana farmers and ranchers know better. Please re-elect me, Ingrid Gustafson, for the Montana Supreme Court.
Paid for by Gustafson for Justice, Billings, Montana.
As much time as we have left, let's go right to the phones. Monica Chanel with us, Western District candidate for U.S. House, Democratic nominee, listening in Great Falls on KQDI, Talk of the Town. It's Martin. Martin, thanks. You're on the air with Monica.
Yeah, thanks. Monica, I appreciate you being on. My concern lies also with kind of the diesel problem that I believe is happening, you know, by design, not by happenstance. We are basically kind of, like you said, being thrust into a position of get along or go along, which is problematic for me, being a resident of Montana my entire life and being American. I think that we have to make some sort of stand and say, hey, you know what? You know, that might be good for you and the WEF, but, you know, for as far as what we want to do, like, we have to have regulation and we have to utilize all of our energy resources. So wind is good, solar is good, geothermal is good, oil and gas are good.
Yeah.
Both, you know, good as well. So diesel coming up, and a huge shortage, which is going to be problematic for a lot of people. Thanks.
Martin, thanks for that. And less of a question, more of a comment. Maybe you can roll that into. Let's grab one more here. Chris is listening in Columbia Falls. Chris, just a few minutes here. So your question for Monica Trinnell.
One thing's puzzling when the, you know, voting time comes around. Would you agree to some sort of law or something that would clean up this whole idea of defamation of character, for instance, you know, when we say things about other politicians to move on, and this goes for all politicians, you know, when are they really telling the truth? We don't want to hear the sarcastic, you know, when they're moving their mouth or lips or something like that. But I mean, this is what we need, because a lot of people just don't trust what politicians say. They, you know, if it's about them and if their character has been stepped upon.
Okay,
you
Chris.
Don't hear it until after the election.
I got so that. I'm going to add to that, because we are running out of time, Chris, and I apologize for that. Again, you know, we start at 9:06. I'm going to roll into that too, Monica, because I was disappointed in your context in calling your opponent a snake. I'm coming for the rest of the snakes. Is what you said in an advertisement. And I just don't think that sets the right tone, especially as we're trying to get to common sense solutions.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the comments. Thank you, Martin and Chris. And what I can say to that is everything I say in my ads is true. I have documented evidence backing them up. I have the reports about Ryan Zinke's investigations. I have printed copies. I'll mail them to you. I'll send them to anybody who wants
okay,
them.
Okay, so you've got proof? Yourself. You've got proof that Ryan Zinke is a snake?
No, I was going to speak to that. So what I was saying is the things that I say in my ads about Ryan Zinke's history and his conduct and what he has done and his corruption is backed up by facts and evidence. To your point that you don't like my ad with the snake in it.
Well, I just think it's the wrong approach.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your view of my ad. And,
thank you.
You know, I think politics, I hear what you're saying. Politics is, I'm reading Mike Mansfield's biography right now. And I was reading about the 1952 election where McCarthyism was running strong and people were saying things about him. And, you know, I wish politics didn't have that in it. It does. That's the world we live in. And look at the things that my opponent is saying about me.
Monica,
and
we're...
some of those things, they are not true. And my kids see them on the air.
Fair.
So I am going to defend myself. I'm going to stand up for myself. I'm going to fight for myself the same way I'll fight for Montana. You know, and you can trust I will be your champion, and I am going to defend myself as well.
I do appreciate you coming on and putting your hat in the ring. I know how what a sacrifice it can be. Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you.
At 9:06 for Voices of Montana.